Welcome to Parents' Perspective. You're not going to believe this. Brenda got her friend Cindy on the phone. What's going on? Cindy responded. Are your kids okay? Thank goodness, yes, Brenda replied. But what could have happened is just mind-blowing. So fill me in, Cindy was becoming impatient. It's a cyber stalker. They've caught a real-life cyber stalker, and it's someone we know. Oh, no! Cindy sank down in her chair. Who is it? Did anybody get abducted or anything? You're sitting down, right? Brenda began. It's the shop teacher at the high school. And yes, he had arranged to meet a student. That's how they caught him. Good grief, Cindy gasped. How do we protect against that? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about teens online? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We are so pleased to have back with us again Dr. Kent L. Norman, an associate professor in the cognitive area in the Department of Psychology at the University of Maryland. He is the director of the Laboratory for Automation Psychology and Decision Processes and is a founding member of the Human-Computer Interaction Laboratory in the University of Maryland Institute for Advanced Computer Studies. His research is on judgment and decision-making and problem-solving, particularly as they pertain to human-computer interaction, human factors, and cognitive issues in interface design. He is the author or co-author of many journal articles and book chapters. He's recently developed a course entitled Cyber Psychology and written an accompanying book, Cyber Psychology, An Introduction to the Psychology of Human-Computer Interaction, for publication by Cambridge University Press. Dr. Norman is married and has two sons and two daughters. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Norman.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Dr. Norman, what would you want to tell teens about using the Internet?
Well, the first thing I would tell them is to really think, beware of everything that you do on the Internet. One, you should beware of strangers, just like any situation. Don't talk to strangers. If somebody appears to be friendly, make sure that they're a real person and they're not somebody doing what's called cyber grooming, which is putting on some appearance to be somebody that they're not. And unfortunately, this is a very common behavior among adults and almost promoted to, well, try different avatars, try different personalities, be yourself in virtual space. So a lot of adults will go to sites like Second Life and live kind of a life, this virtual life. And that's fine, but then when they start moving into kid spaces, it's a problem. It's like you're now moving into the school ground. You're moving into my house, and that's not right.
How can kids tell, since it's so hard to figure it out?
I know. How can adults tell?
Yeah.
It's very difficult. And so you really don't accept a friend invitation from somebody that you don't know personally. Second, don't use your name. Don't give your name out, your address, your telephone number in emails to other people. Just really make sure that you know who your friends are. And I would really encourage kids are going to be on the Internet. They're going to be on Instant Messenger and on Facebook and all of these computing sites. They really need to practice netiquette. They need to be sociable, they need to be friendly, they need to be hospitable to other people. They should not engage in the sorts of things we tell them not to. Don't start rumors. There have been cases of people extremely hurt by rumors that get started on the Internet. And kids are sensitive, and some kids can be overly sensitive. There are some accounts of suicides being the result of cyberbullying. Mm. And they just could not take the fact that everybody on the Internet knew about some picture that got out. So we have to be very careful of that. I would also tell them to put their best foot forward. Put what you would like your grandmother to see on your Facebook account. You really don't want to put obnoxious pictures. You don't want to put things about drugs and alcohol. You need to stay away from that kind of stuff. Your favorite movie, fine. Your favorite band, fine. But a lot of the kinky stuff, no. So be very careful about what you're promoting. And these social sites can be used for many good things. They can be used for looking out for other people, to send somebody a message. Well, I didn't see you in class this last week. Are you okay? What's going on? To find people, I've got 700 friends on Facebook. Here's somebody with 5 friends. Maybe he should be my friend.
Is there anything else that's positive that we should know about this since you started sort of down this road? It would be very nice to hear some positive stuff.
Well, there are positive things in terms of appreciation groups, memorials for people, for dealing with grief, for dealing with happiness. This is what we do socially, and kids today are used to doing it more online. So instead of sending a sympathy card or a birthday card, let's get rid of the paper. Let's do it electronically. And so these things are taking the place of what we would use in the past.
That brings up an interesting question, and as a psychologist, this must be very interesting to you. If online has substituted for our social networks and our socialization, what happens to people learning social cues from body language and physical cues and all that kind of thing? Tone of voice?
Kids still live in the physical world, so they have to learn all those sorts of things. We still have, thank God, face-to-face interaction, and that's what they look forward to. You know, the normal kid uses the internet planning for future social interactions. The abnormal kid uses the internet to avoid those face-to-face encounters. So they're the ones that are going to be in seclusion. They're just in their room. They don't come out. They're dealing with just the electronic virtual environments. And those kids we have to watch out for. The normal kid is, if he's socially active online, they're socially active in the classroom and in the neighborhood and at parties.
But is it easier in an online environment to misconstrue things because you don't have the other cues?
Yes, absolutely. And there's a lot of information about that. We tend to believe that people understand what we're saying more often than they really do. And so you have to be careful of that. More and more with instant messaging, it's more of a dialogue. So somebody can say, well, what did you mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's a constant back and forth dialogue. And also the amazing introduction of emoticons. So we're creating all these happy faces. And a lot of these services, you can just click on, you know, a smile face, a frown face. And so these are used in proxy for the body language and the facial expressions. But even there, you know, a lot of kids are using a video iChat. So now they're using webcams to talk to each other. So they can smile and, you know, wave to each other. They're really out there with the technology.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teens online.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Kent Norman about how teens are using the internet's social interaction site.
I've received messages with emoticons on them offering me an opportunity to use emoticons. I have absolutely no idea how to work with that, but I remember thinking, this is so cute. I wonder where she got this, this little thing that keeps winking at me.
Yes. We've dealt a little bit about what you wanted teens to know. What should parents know now that all of our blood pressure is rising?
Parents really need to know so much about their kids. They need to know them personally. They need to know their values. They need to spend time with them. Part of it's not about computers and the internet at all, but it's just your relationship with your kids. So I love this particular show and this particular organization for dealing with this issue of parents and children. So that's really the most important thing. Then the thing is to start understanding what are your kids into. And it used to be easy. If they're into sports, you could see it. It was very clear. If they're into music, that's pretty obvious when you're hearing the music. But when they're doing things on the internet and online, they can be covert. And that's the difficulty of kind of coming into an understanding what they consider often to be their private spaces. Probably the first thing that parents need to know is there are no private spaces on the internet. Read the terms of agreement. at all these social computing sites.
Do the kids know this?
No. No.
Okay.
In fact, they don't realize when you send an email message on Google or post information in a blog on Facebook, who owns that information? Google, Facebook, it's their content. Now, the sharing aspects and privacy aspects are important, but there really are no private spaces. So I think kids almost need to think about whatever I type, it's like a postcard. It can go through the mail and everybody's going to read it. And so they should consider this information is open to parents. Parents can go into the rooms of their teenagers because it's their house. And the same thing, parents need to understand that they should be monitoring what's going on these internet sites.
But just as quickly as a parent can enter a room, kids can switch to a different item on their screen.
Now, one thing I always advise parents to do is keep computers in common rooms. They shouldn't be in the bedroom. They should be in an open area where everybody can see. But that's not even enough. You can notice a kid changing windows or changing something when you come into the room. That can be very fast. But one of the fathers of a daughter who had been abducted said, that computer was in the middle of the room. We saw everything. We just weren't reading it. We didn't see just precisely what was going on. So kids can keep a lot of this information very secret, and they can even set privacy levels so their parents can't see their own Facebook profiles and things. So it's really an issue of standing behind your kid, asking them, what have been your experiences on the internet? Tell me about what's going on your cyber life, and just putting your arm around them. Kids get into social interactions because they want friends, they need affection, they want love, they want to be accepted, they want approval. And it's important that the parents are there to give that approval and to see what they're doing. Parents, I think, should not be so restrictive that they say, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, because then they'll sneak around and find ways to do that, that and the other thing, especially on the internet. But I would really suggest that parents know a lot about the internet. Now, this is difficult. The age range of us parents goes from 30s to late 50s. And we did not grow up with the internet. We didn't even grow up with computers. And so we've got a lot of learning to do to keep up. And one of the ways to do that is to have your kids show you. You know, show me what you're doing. Show me the Facebook profiles. Show me some of these things on YouTube that you're watching. I'm really interested in those. How does it work?
It's interesting. We've done so many shows where we emphasize, get your kid outside, get your kid away from the television, get your kid away from the computer.
I totally agree with those shows.
I mean, that's really hard enough work, but you're also indicating that there is a time and a place for kids to be online.
Yes, but again, as you say, we really restrict that. In our house, we set limits. You've been on Facebook for 2 hours, get outside.
Do you have multiple computers in your house?
I'm afraid so. We have just about a computer per person.
That's not unusual, is it?
That's right.
That must make it harder to get into the kid's own computer because the kid has his or her own computer.
Nobody has their own computer. It's all in a common space, and everybody can get into anybody else's account. I know all the passwords. Everybody knows all of our passwords. They know my password. And so we view the computer space as being just an open room where everybody can go and look at everybody else's music, everybody else's files. We don't have any secrets. They don't have any secrets from us.
I was in the home of someone with six children, and they turned the dining room into a computer study space for their children. It was very interesting to me. They have an enormous kitchen table where everybody eats and company eats and so forth. And the dining room, there's a big round table in the middle. And then there are computers against the wall and little cubbies and whatever. I don't think there's a computer per kid. There are chalkboards about who's got things to do, projects that need to be done. I need the computer from 8 to 10 tonight or whatever, messages. And I thought it was a good idea because you could certainly go into that room and see a lot going on with all those kids.
Yeah.
But with older teens, what's to prevent them from having a password that you don't know? They could have other passwords you do know.
Right. If you're really extremely concerned about your kids, there are spyware programs that parents are buying to run in the background. But again, you have to be pretty computer savvy to do these sorts of things. But it can be important if some kind of suspicious activities are going on. And so that allows the parents to see screenshots that are taken every few seconds to see what the kids are into. You know, I really don't advise getting, you know, to that level.
Then parents are full-time required to be monitoring mm-hmm. what's going on. It's kind of an overwhelming project.
Right, right.
What do you anticipate in the future for internet sites and the use of them by teens? Can you give us a little hint of what you think?
Well, they're not going away. They will probably expand in both the number of sites, the specialty of different sites. They'll become bigger. They'll become more and more interesting. The people that are developing these things are, you know, in a sense, masters, luring people into doing interesting things. And one of the most interesting things are social things that we do with each other. Games are great, but they only attract a certain proportion. Online shopping, you know, is great, but that attracts just, you know, a portion. And so they're expanding this more and more to diversity. We'll also see some of the digital divides closing. So now it's not just the upper middle class that will be into computers, but it'll be all classes. So we're opening that up with cheaper and cheaper computers and internet connections. And the most amazing thing, I think, will be mobile computing. Kids have cell phones, and you're familiar with them texting messages back and forth. Well, this is now social computing. And it's expanding because with devices such as the iPhone and BlackBerries and Wi-Fi devices, now I've got the internet in my palm, and I can now check my Facebook things wherever I am, on the school bus, you know, wherever. So these devices are going to take off. Now, this becomes even more difficult because there's no monitoring of these sorts of things.
If you let your child have that sort mm-hmm. of thing.
But
do we have any control over that?
No, and there's the other problem is that all of us adults are walking around with these sorts of devices. So how can we say to kids that are beginning to drive, that are beginning to learn how to become adults, they're going to want these devices? And so once again, we have to just train them how to use these devices, what to do, what not to do. And it becomes much, much more important for us to mentor our kids and to have them realize the responsibilities that they have in social computing.
I guess this starts when they're really, really young.
Yes.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teens online. For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Kent Norman about how teens are using the internet's social interaction sites.
One of the things that I think we can expect to see is much more surveillance by websites and by the authorities. As we become more aware of cyber stalking and the cyberbullying and things that are going on, first of all, the administrators of sites like MySpace, Facebook, are going to worry about being sued. MySpace mm-hmm. has been sued. They won that case. But there could be other things coming down that if something happens and it happened at your site, you're responsible because that's the content that might have gotten out that then led to this problem. So I think the social computing sites are going to take a little more, well, actually a lot more responsibility about what's going on in the content. We've seen this happen so far with proprietary information of songs and videos and music sharing. So there's hundreds of thousands of lawsuits that are out there because of illegal music sharing. The next thing we're going to see are lawsuits about the information that might be released or exposed about teens and those sorts of problems. So they're going to be very careful. I think the law enforcement authorities are going to spend a lot more time on the internet watching out for illicit behaviors and problems. And they're getting very, very good at it. They will be able to track sex offenders very well on the internet, and they will be able to detect these people that are using cyber grooming and saying, no, you're not. You actually are this other person. That's a little scary, too, because that means that Big Brother is really out there as well as the cyber stalkers.
I was thinking, oh, how reassuring that we can catch these people, but that is a good point.
Yeah.
Now, I guess the other thing, the flip side of this, is teens have a lot of stuff out there that's accessible to authorities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when they apply to college and they apply for jobs and they're going on in their life, this stuff can follow them, right?
Yes, and you can even go further if they run for president.
Oh,
of course.
And somebody pulls up, well, hey, what about this party? Then it'll all be out there.
Do you know whether colleges and universities are looking at some of these sites when kids apply?
Not officially, but unofficially, employers definitely do. And you want to find out, what is this person into? And so, yes, a lot of that is going on. People are being Googled and Facebooked and everything else.
And because it's all public.
How does somebody who has a lot of stuff keep somebody from doing something malicious, putting something onto somebody's information that isn't true? But if it's on there, how do you get that out?
Well, hopefully, if people do crack into accounts and put incorrect information, then they're liable to that and can be fixed. There have been, I guess, some cases where people have cracked into MySpace and put other information. So that's really pretty much the responsibility of the websites themselves. It's sort of like if you have identity theft and somebody charges all of these things to your credit card, you don't have to pay it. It's the credit card company that's taking the loss. And so in the same way, a lot of these sites, when they're cracked into, it's their fault. It's not the user's fault.
And so a teen could get in touch with whoever manages the website.
Have it removed.
Okay.
Yes. So I tell my students and my kids, do not put up any information ever that you would want to have follow you and haunt you for the rest of your life. And I think kids need to be aware of this. They really need to learn about the fact that they're not anonymous, that all this information is there. And it's not transient. If you put something up and take it down, it might still be in somebody's server. It's not public, but it's still recorded. There is an organization that does a snapshot of the internet. And so you can go back 10 years and see what was on the internet.
Oh,
that's
my.
That's really scary.
That's really something.
Because young people, especially young teens, you can talk till you're blue in the face. They're like, oh, they're kind of indicating to me that this could be much more exciting than I realized, as opposed to, gee, maybe I should follow these guidelines. What worries you most about teens using the internet?
We really don't know how many things are out there, and I think that's what worries me. It's so unknown and it's so changing. The sites that we're talking about today only opened up a couple years ago, and yet they are so big and so ominous on the horizon of the information superhighway. So there are a lot of things I worry. I was teaching my class and I asked the students, what would you worry about the most? This one man immediately raised his hand and said, pornography. That is out there for everybody to see, and teens can fall into that. Teens can get into many different websites of alternative cultures and information that you just don't know is there. I mean, you can go into a bookstore and you can find some weird stuff in a bookstore, but on the internet, it's so vast and so much material of everybody grabbing for attention, not just people marketing products, but people that are promoting ideas.
For our listeners who want to pursue some of the issues we've just been discussing, what resources would you recommend?
I would really recommend the internet, unfortunately, because books are going to be outdated already. But there are a number of incredibly wonderful websites that deal with internet safety for kids. There are sites like cybersmartkids.com, netsmart.org, isafe.inc, safekids.com, and I've organized all of these at a website at the university so that you can get to these and other information about internet safety. And so let me just leave this last one, which is lap.umd.edu.
That's wonderful. So all of it will fall into our lap. Is
yes.
That right? Okay. This is clearly a discussion that could go on for many hours. We are just so grateful. And Dr. Kent Norman, we are so glad that you could join us to continue this discussion about teens online.
Thank you. It's an extremely important topic, and I appreciate the time.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 351. Please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. And tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.